Good morning. Oh, almost fumbled it there. High and tight, coach. Come on. Deuteronomy chapter 4 is where we will be this morning. Deuteronomy 4 and teaching the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, to 7th and 8th graders, as you can imagine, is quite fun, is the word I would use. Interesting. But that's what we're doing. And of course, fall break was this week, and it's been a good one. It's been a long one. This would be, I think, my 9th time this week standing before people and talking about the Lord, and definitely living that the spirit is willing and the flesh is weak. Looking forward to a slow Sunday afternoon. That's what I'm hoping for. And last night, I made my way to Joe Wheeler State Park and spent time on a couples retreat at Sherrod Avenue. Spent some time with them talking about the importance of the church and, quite frankly, kind of talking about how awesome y'all are. So I felt like, you know, maybe I should say that to your face, right? Maybe we'll do a little bit of that today. But they probably were a little shocked that I picked Deuteronomy chapter 4. Especially if they don't know me very well, to kind of do that and to talk about the importance of the church. And I guess just to start, thank you for being here this morning. There are a lot of other places that you could be, a lot of good places that you could be and choose to be and be edified. And you've made the choice to be with us today. And I do not take that lightly or for granted. I am thankful for this church who continually, I think that if most people saw the number that gathered here, they would be really shocked to find out how much the Lord uses us to be his hands and feet. And that's one of the reasons why I encourage our students all the time to at least make one visit, to come visit us and see kind of the setup here and how God has used this group of people. And we want to honor him in that. And I hope and pray that we've done that in our hearts today as we've sang, as we've participated, and that's certainly what we want for you. We want you to feel, when you come here, that you are a participant and that we are thankful that you are here with us today. First of all, let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 4, beginning in verse 5. It says, "See, I've taught you statutes and rules as the Lord my God commanded me." This is Moses reiterating, telling again the second law here, that you should do them in the land that you are entering to take possession of it. Keep them and do them, for that will be your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of peoples who, when they hear all these statutes, will say, "Surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people." For what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as the Lord our God is to us? Whenever we call upon him, and what great nation is there that has statutes and rules so righteous as all this law and is set before you today? Only take care and keep your soul, and there's that word I love, diligently, lest you forget the things that your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. Make them known to your children and your children's children. And certainly we have things that we can point out there. Would we say that people would look at our country as a whole and go, what a wise and astute society. I think that we can look at some of our history and do that. But he's telling them, you're going to be different. This is innovative stuff here. Now, most of us probably don't think of Deuteronomy and equate it with innovation and change. But when you put it into the context of when it was written and the things that are commanded, we can start with the command to love God. That God, the creator who spoke all things into existence, would find it necessary and a desire for us to love him back, to want to be in relationship with him. I've said before that when God commands us to do things, those are usually things that are not easy. When God commands us to love him, it's with the understanding that it's going to be difficult sometimes. When we enter into a marriage relationship and we make those vows, we make vows, why? Because it's going to be hard sometimes. We're saying, I'm not going to quit on you for any old reason that I want. And I'm going to stick with you as closely as I can. So it's very innovative that God would command us to love him. He also is telling us in that command that he is lovable. He is capable of being loved if we seek. Diligently keep your soul. Teach these things to your children. I find much more in common with this people that are about to enter the promised land than I do with the people in the wilderness, right? I'm not showing up today going, when am I ever going to eat again? Right? I'm going to go home and eat again pretty quickly. I'm going to go to an air-conditioned home, or what we're quickly approaching, a warm home. And I don't have any doubt that that's going to be there. And so this is what I have similarity with. Take heart, take heed, lest you forget what God has done for you and you begin to look around and go, oh, look at all the things that I've accomplished and I've done. And God consistently says, remember, obedience is a part of all this. In verse 6, keep them and do them, for that will be your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples, who when they hear all these statutes will say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. Chapter 6, verses 6 through 8, we see how to promote things that are priorities in our life. The things that are priorities in our life, people know pretty quickly. It's one of the first things they're going to notice. What is important? We've read this recently, but we'll read it again. Verse 6, and these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently. There's that word again, to your children. And you shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. As I've stated before, a parent is the primary educator. My father and I do not have a great relationship. We don't talk often. It's not one of anger or angst or holding grudges. We just don't talk very often. But I can look at my life and I see the influence of Philip Creasy all over it, right? Because I knew the things that were important to him. When I watch basketball, that's who I think of. He loves basketball, right? We played a lot of basketball growing up. And so there's those influences. I knew what the priority was for him. People can know what the priority is for you. Recently, my son has had a hard time understanding why we live in the state of Tennessee, but cheer for the University of Alabama, right? And that's been some interesting conversations. And we said, hey, man, you can cheer for the Tennessee Titans all day long if you'd like. That other team, we don't. He's having a hard time struggling with that, right? And there's some question there. Do you know what's not a question in his heart? That Jesus died on the cross for him and rose the third day. Last night I asked him every night, hey, what are we praying about tonight, son? And that was one of the things. I want to pray and thank God for what Jesus did. And that's not all me. I don't want you to think, oh, Travis doing such good. I'm probably the reason there's confusion about the football thing. And you can look right over there and see the reason why my son prays and thanks God for what he did through Jesus. And so we want those things to be a priority. I know that sending my kids to church every time the doors are open and every time a Christian school does not guarantee that they're going to choose to live for Jesus. I know that. But when it all's said and done, I want them to be able to look at me and go, hey, they did everything they could to make me choose to live for Jesus. They didn't hold anything back in that effort. And so there's an aspect of obedience, and we influence, right? I have kids all the time who, you know, I don't want my parents, they're not influencing me for anything. Literally, you saying that means that they're influencing you. If you choose to do something in spite of your parents, that's still influence, right? There's influence everywhere. There's peer pressure everywhere. At the school, we want the peer pressure to be the righteous thing, to do the right thing, to do the good thing in God's eyes. But there's peer pressure, and you use that. We all use those things. And you could say the word manipulate, or you could talk about human flourishing, right? We want every person that comes to the doors here, whether they're coming to attend church or go to school here, we want them to flourish. And we believe that that starts with a knowledge of who Jesus is and who God is and his plan for their life, and that there is a plan for their life. There are people walking around the streets today who believe there is no purpose in us being here. It's amazing when they come to an understanding that there were good works prepared ahead of time for us to do. It is a life-changing, life-altering thing. When he asks these questions, who has a God so near to them? I do. I have a God who's not only near, but indwells me, right? And the Israelites here are tremendously blessed. They've been chosen by God for whatever reason, really, because they were small and there was nothing they could really boast in. We could not do this. But whose God is near to them like a Christian's? Nobody. We have a God who indwells us, who wants to live in us and guide us in every aspect of life. In Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 7, he says, "For what great nation is there? We have that. And what great nation is there has statutes, rules so righteous as all the law that is set before you today? We do. We do, even above and beyond what the Israelites had." Paul speaks of that over and over again, right? He says, you're the actual heirs of Abraham. You're the ones who have faith that leads you to obedience, right? Our obedience is not an option of trying to earn our salvation. No, the salvation of God is a free gift given to us. Our obedience is response to what God has done. The least I can do is do the things that you've commanded me to do. And we mature to the point where that's a loving thing. Romans 8 verse 11 tells us that if the same Spirit that raised Jesus from the dead indwells you, will He not do the same thing for your mortal bodies? As sad as the loss of life is, to know that there's a reunion coming and that there will never be a time in this life that we will be better than that moment when God calls us home. When the dead in Christ rise first, and the reassuring moment in our life that all of this has been worth it, written by Paul from prison on many occasions. Romans 8, the glory that we're going to receive will make everything that you suffer here on this earth seem like not even mentioning. Think about that. Because there's people in this room that have a heartache that I don't even know how you showed up today. To be honest. And it's because of what? Of what Jesus has done. That Paul can write the letters that he writes, suffering the things that he suffered. He says, rejoice! Because all of this stuff leads us to a better image and knowledge of the love that we have in Jesus. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 10 through 12. I'm going to make you turn a few pages. And when the Lord your God brings you in the land that he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give you with great and good cities you did not build, and houses full of all good things that you did not fill, and cisterns that you did not dig, and vineyards and olive trees that you did not plant, and when you eat and are full. That sounds more like Travis Creasy right there. Then what? Then take care lest you forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. Is the Lord your God, you shall fear him, you shall serve, and by his name you shall swear. See, that's where we are. We are the living and breathing embodiment of the warning that Moses gave them thousands of years ago. When you are blessed beyond measure, when even your complaint is because of the blessing you have, then the temptation will be to turn your back on God who gave you all of those things. Deuteronomy 31 verse 6 and 8 is actually quoted in Hebrews 13, 5, when the most famous part of that verse is, beware of the love of money. And then he goes on to say, and he quotes Deuteronomy, which Jesus also quotes, and says, I will never leave you nor forsake you. And the point there in Hebrews 13 is when did God cease to be enough? When did Jesus cease to be enough? When I'm having one of those days where every breath I take and every breath I exhale is a complaint, that question comes howling from somewhere, and I'd say the Holy Spirit, when did Jesus cease to be enough for you? Well, it's because I thought that I did all these things, that I accomplished all these wonderful, amazing things that I preached 9 sermons this week. And it was the blessing of being with God's people, even in a terrible, awful time, that Jesus is still and will always be enough. How can Paul write those letters in a jail cell, being provided food by church members in his darkest moments? That's how. When we as a church choose to be the hands and feet of Jesus and we pray the prayer, Lord, make those opportunities so abundantly clear that old Stonehead over here doesn't miss them. You see, the problem with church and coming here and looking for a reason to be offended and looking for a reason not to be here is there's no room for process anymore. There's no room for journey anymore. In our you got to have it now society. It's got to be perfect or I don't want it. Well, you don't want anything. Every person in this room is in the process, in the sanctification. I expect to come and have things that are said to me that are a little offensive. The truth is offensive. You can't. I don't know how you educate somebody and don't offend them. It's turning the light on. And so there's priority in the process, in the journey. Some of you are older than me. Some of you have been Christians longer than I've even been alive. And so I need to be attentive to you. Some of you still have that faith as a child. And so I need to be attentive to you. Everybody in this room has something to teach this old knot-headed guy up here. And for some reason, with your patience and mercy, you let me get up here and talk about stuff that are near and dear to our hearts. But there's an indwelling. If God doesn't require me to be perfect day in and day out, maybe we could leave a little room for everybody else to grow a little and be better and progress. That's when we're visiting a church. That's when we're a member of a church for decades. And so there has to be room for growth. There has to be. Or what are we even doing? Because we have the perfect law of liberty. Back in Deuteronomy chapter 4 in verse 8, what does he speak of? And what great nation is there that has statutes and rules so righteous as all this law that I set before you today? In James 1:25, he says, looking into the perfect law of what? Liberty. As a human being that lives in this country, the last thing I want to do is make extra things that limit the liberty of other people. Because the cyclical thing there is that if I limit the liberty of other people, I will eventually limit my own liberty. But the beautiful thing about Christianity is there's this aspect of, I love you and I would prefer it this way. Because I love you, I'm willing to somewhat fall on the sword and go, why don't you have it your way? At least once every one. And once again, I'm preaching the choir, right? We're going to have an intergen service here in a couple weeks. And I'm sure for some of you, that is just like out of like, ugh, I don't understand this. This is, what are we doing? And it's very much human beings to have structure and process and in a certain way to do things. And there certainly are things where God shows up and he goes, this is the way I want them and this is how I want it done. But there are way more where we show up and we say, this is the way I want it and this is the way I want it done. And if it's not done that way, and I'm going to tell you, just read 1 Corinthians 13 and there's a lot in there about that. And so there's this perfect law of liberty. 1 John 5:3 says, God's commandments are not burdensome. We look at God's commandments as burdensome because we got our own way of doing things. Once again, all of God's commands are for human flourishing. You want the society, the ideology, the belief in God to continue on for decades? Well, you got to have these kiddos, right? There's going to be children. And as I told the group last night, it's amazing to me how many times I've shown up to a wedding practice. Right? And the bride's there and the groom's there, much more the bride. Sorry, ladies. It's got to be perfect. Every detail's got to be down to the letter. And then they introduce this little kid who he may do it perfect in the practice, but you come to game time and he's going to do everything but what you want him to do. And so my encouragement to them as always, hey, listen, if you want it to be perfect, you better, first of all, leave me at home. Because if eloquence is what you're looking for, that is not here. And second of all, you better not have a kid there. Right? It's just not. But that's what makes them fun. Right? That's what makes it cute. Like, you gotta have the kids. That's church, everybody. Yesterday, after the service, I had someone come to me and go, you know, my kids were there. I'm sorry. They probably, I said, I don't even hear it anymore. I'm just happy they're there. Right? You bring the kid to it. And it doesn't matter if it's a highfalutin thing, as I might call it, like a wedding, or the saddest day. And those kids just bring the light, and it's like a break. Everybody's all serious. The kid shows up, and they actually make it memorable. So we love the kiddos here. And it may be because I've got two of my own that are a circus unto themselves. But I understand without this church and without God, I'm not alive today. I got a box full of envelopes of people who made the people at Huntsville Hospital think that I was a rock star. Like, you can ask Whitney, that's one thing. I do specifically remember them coming to my door with boxes of envelopes going, who are you and what do you do? And, you know, that made a pathway for me to say, well, I'm just a church-going fella, and these folks some reason love me. That's the gospel, everybody. I can't do it any more eloquently than that. And I am a dad because of you. Because of you swooping in. And on my worst day, having an elder's wife who picks up my kids and takes them trick-or-treating. That's it, folks. We can have all the stuff down pat, and there are parts of it that we absolutely should. No doubt. I'm not arguing against that. I'm not saying that's bad. But if the loving part's not there, and the willing to do the things that maybe someone else isn't willing to do, then let's just pack it up and go home. I think that's a biblical thing. That's what he tells the prophets. Hey, you do all the things, but you mistreat the most vulnerable. Stop doing the other things. So today, we look for the opportunity. I've not been around many churches that love to be the hands and feet as this bunch does. And so we take an opportunity every service that we have to offer our service to you. And whatever that may look like. Maybe you're not a Christian today. And let me tell you, there is no better day. No better way to make our day than for us to assist you in that process. And it is a process. It is a journey. There's a justification once and for all found in Jesus. And your sins will be wiped away. And you will have a place made. It's already made for you. It's built for you to go to. But then after that, we'll also come along and help you in that journey. And sometimes it'll be, hey, don't do what we did here. Because that was a mistake. And please learn from our mistakes. Or maybe it's a, hey, we kind of know better in this situation, and we're not going to force our own way, but we're going to love you wherever you're at. And whatever that looks like, we are willing to assist. And some of that I'm equipped for, and some of that there are brothers and sisters here that are way better equipped than I am, and we will certainly point you in the right direction of those people. But if there's a way that we can assist you today, we look for the opportunity to do that. That's really why we're here, is to serve you and be of service to the one true King, Jesus, who did die on the cross and went to a tomb like we will all go one day, but he did not stay there in the hope that we will not either, and that he will call us home one day. And if we can help you wherever you're at, we offer that as we sing this song and as we stand.